둘, 셋, 파!
Borahe Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 80.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
You have a fantastic backdrop here. Mine isn't as nearly as interesting.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, and welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org. Consequence and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks as always for making your way here for checking out the episode. I do hope you hit that subscribe button so you can keep up with all the interviews that we put out every single week. It's a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So it's a great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover those new ones. You can grab us at Spotify, Apple Podcast, and NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from. Subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. And also don't forget to give a rating, leave a review. Those always help out so much. We've had some great guests on lately, including Hamish Linklater. He's starring as Abraham Lincoln in the Apple TV Plus series Manhunt. Gary Clark Jr. talking about his new album JPEG Raw. We had Danielle McDonald from The Tourist out now on Netflix. Sheryl Crow was here to talk about her latest album Evolution. We celebrated our 900th episode with a special featuring Brandon Flowers of The Killers, Gracie Abrams, Michael C. Hall from Dexter, Dolly Parton, Michael Shannon, Sarah Silverman, and Shelley Hennig, as well as hung out with the Jesus and Mary Chain, the Veronicas, John Bradley, Big Thief's Adrian Linker, Anna Camp, Chris Robinson of the Black Crows, Joe Keery, just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. That's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest, Rudy Mancuso. You, of course, know Rudy from Awkward Puppets. He created that one. Very big internet personality, actor, and musician, and now his life story being told in Prime Video's Musica. It is the mostly true film based on his life. It tells a coming-of-age love story of an aspiring creator with synesthesia who must come to terms with an uncertain future while navigating the pressures of love, family, and his Brazilian culture in Newark, New Jersey. Now, Rudy's going to talk about, what it was like to turn his life into a film, directing, acting, and writing the project, and how his lack of formal filmmaking education, led to one of the most creatively shot movies of the year. Rudy goes on to discuss the melodic motif that scores the film, his love of film scores, working with J.B. Smoove, and what he wants to do next. It's all that and more. We're talking Musica, out now on Prime Video and co-starring Camila Mendes. It's Kyle Meredith with Rudy Mancuso.
Hello, hello.
I enjoyed the hell out of this movie. It looks incredible. Of course, the music is fun. And the story is, it's a real story, right? This is your life story to a point, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. I appreciate the kind words. It is. It is essentially like a decade of experiences in my life boiled down to 90 minutes.
So we know a little bit your backstory. Obviously, we know your backstory now in the movie, but really leading up to this, like, at what point did you figure out, I have this, my life can be a movie, and here's how I can get it made?
Well, for as long as I could remember, I fantasized about exploring this perspective of, a unique musical perspective, someone who has synesthesia, which is something that I've experienced my entire life. Also, the unique cultural perspective, that of a Brazilian American. Those are two things I really wanted to bring to screen because I think they're seldomly explored in a cinematic way. And I figured what better way to adapt my own life and my own a culmination of my own experiences, because that's a story that only I could tell. I guess embracing the personal aspect of that story became the dream.
And you directed it, besides, of course, writing and acting in it. Did you have any foundation there? Because again, it looks amazing. It really does.
Did I have a foundation from a directorial standpoint?
Yeah, like getting a movie on Prime, that's not nothing, right? For them to trust you to also direct this, that's the part of your story I was wondering, like, did I miss something there? Like, because people go to film school for a long time to make a movie look like this.
Right. Yeah, I didn't go to film school, but I've been in love with film and music for as long as I can remember. And I knew I wanted to be a filmmaker. And I knew I wanted to compose music for my own stories, for my own films. That was always the long-term dream. I was born professionally on the internet. I was making content, producing shorts, directing music videos. And I found my footing that way. I developed an audience that these little shorts resonated with. And I learned a lot through the very guerrilla style makeshift way of producing content and, in a way, filmmaking. By the time it came to write the script and adapt the story into a feature, I had so many ideas that I had auditioned on the internet over the course of 10 years to pull from, that this seemed very, very possible. I fell in love with this, my co-writer, Dan Lagana, his writing style and his brain. And we co-wrote this script together, and he guided me through that process. I had never written a script before. And we took the pitch out to Amazon almost nearly 5 years ago now. And you know, there are obstacles, and went through development as films do. And fast forward to today, you know, we have the product.
I also thought about that, the writing side of it, because I think I was just maybe, I don't know, 10 minutes into the movie, you know, we have the diner scene at the beginning, and I thought, how is this actually written on paper? Because, you know, the editing, I mean, finding the rhythm, I feel like is in the editing, like to a certain degree, like to get the rhythm, you know, that would be there. But actually to write that on paper, it doesn't seem like it would be in a traditional style, I guess.
No, certainly not. And I think that's that lack of education. I never approached filmmaking from an academic perspective. It gave me more freedom. It was liberating in a way, because there were very little parameters. I didn't know too much about structuring a page and a scene, and then eventually the three acts. So Dan and I kind of tackled the pages together. The diner scene specifically, a lot of what you're seeing is how it read. It would be, you know, a line of dialogue, and then in the scene direction, it would say, rather than Rudy hears a sound and gets distracted and looks off camera, it would say, it would be a little bit more poetic, and you'd have like tick, thwip, slash, boom, in caps and in bold letters with a description beside it that says a fork hits a skillet. Or a plate hits a table. So it's not the easiest read, but it definitely paints the musical picture. So rhythm was such a heavy part of how the set pieces and scenes were described. We normally music is treated separately from dialogue and story. With this, it was all very heavily interwoven. And I shot a version of that diner scene to exemplify the style of the film, and I used it to pitch the movie.
Oh, wow. So that was the one. That was the scene right there. That's interesting.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Rudy Mancuso. And so I would imagine then that you already heard the music and even those moments, like before the full story was there.
Oh, absolutely. The process was almost backwards here. Most of the music was composed before the script was even finished. So I had an idea in my head of how the music would sound and how the compositions would play out in all the major set pieces before we even finished writing the story.
So what can you say about that? Because when you've got to decide on, you know, the aural motif of your life, and then there's her song, like how did you get it pared down to, like, how did you get to that song?
There's one melodic motif that's reoccurring in almost every single set piece of the film. If you listen closely, this specific melody is slowed down and is a little bit more melodic in some of the slower moments and romantic moments, and is sped up and the time signature changes on some of the more rhythmic moments, but that melody is consistent. So it was about reinterpolating that one motif in a dozen different ways to satisfy all the different set pieces. But it kind of found itself. I had an idea very early on how that melody would sound and how it would sneak in and creep into almost every single musical piece and cue.
See, I guess that's what I'm getting at. It's like, to some degree, this song becomes your theme song of your life. Like, right. You have to love it to a certain degree.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, I was excited about the chord progression and that melody. And that's the beauty of a melody, is that it can be adapted and twisted and turned and reversed in so many ways that the listener may not even realize they're hearing the same thing. I mean, you know, a good example of that is what Justin Hurwitz did on La La Land. That main theme that everyone walked away humming was recurring and disguised in that same chord progression was used so many times during that film that before you knew it, you got 10 songs for the price of one, in a way.
With synesthesia, you know, as we learned throughout this movie, but thinking about it in the terms of like the music that you do put together, the music that you do online with your shorts, you know, on socials and everything, do you find that having synesthesia draws you to certain types of music?
It's a good question. If it does, I'm not sure what that type is. My musical taste is continuously changing. I love film scores, compositions for film and TV specifically. I love the magnitude of the orchestra. I listen to more scores than I do songs and source music. But it's a very eclectic taste. You know, I love everything from Antonio Carlos Jobim and Sinatra to Gorillaz and LCD Sound System. But I do find myself listening to film composers like Benjamin Wallfisch, Rachel Portman, Hans Zimmer, of course, John Williams, John Debney, amongst so many others, more than anything else. And maybe it is attributed to the synesthetic mind and perspective. I'm constantly trying to build a story in my head based on the sounds that I hear. So film scores lend themselves naturally to that idea and pursuit really easily.
Yeah, sure. When it's already tied to images in a certain way, even if you haven't seen those images.
Exactly. Like you can right.
Fill those there. Yeah. I love that. And I agree. I listen to a lot of scores around here too. Some of the folks you got to work with in the movie, JB Smoove, fantastic casting. I just imagine he's always on. That's how he comes across.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, what you see is what you get with JB. It was a dream to work with him. I'm a big fan. I love his character on Curb. It's one of my favorite shows, and his level of improv and his energy is unmatched. We had so much fun. It was the most I've laughed on any set.
You kind of, that's what you sign up for with him.
Yeah,
You didn't live
exactly.
up to it. And I'll also say, like the double date scene. God, I had to walk away. I did. That tension built so hard that I just got up and I was like, I don't want to hit pause because I can't feel this right now.
Yeah, that was certainly the intention, was to build up a level of tension and anxiety that was palpable. It's loosely inspired by that set piece in Miss Doubtfire, where Robin Williams is switching costumes and bouncing between two tables until eventually the jig is up. Yeah, that was a fun one and a complex one to shoot.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Rudy Mancuso. Now, and that brings up, I'm sure, the big question, because you do, when you preface the movie with true-ish or mostly true or whatever it is, then it becomes like, well, what is and what's not? Like the double date scene, did you ever actually get slapped by a fish?
We took a bit of fictional license on the fish slap. No, I never got slapped in the face with a fish. However, I did frequent that fish market. In fact, the fish market really shot in growing up. My mother went there on a weekly basis, and I would accompany her, or I would go on her behalf. And I figured, what's the least romantic place where Rudy and Isabella can lock eyes for the first time? A disgusting fish market. And then the slap in the face is just a kind of an end button gag. And it's also a figurative idea of, like, life is slapping Rudy in the face constantly.
I love that you got to use so much of the real stuff. I mean, that's your real mom, right? Did I understand
Oh,
that?
mom, play my mom. Yep.
Yeah. How is she on getting into acting? Because it looks pretty natural.
Yeah, I mean, she's naturally just fantastic. She's not a trained actor. She has no background there like me, but she has the ability to be her unapologetic self, an authentic self, on and off camera. And that was invaluable to me. So that chemistry and that conversational back and forth is very real, a little too real.
I like that. So the movie, yeah, and this is great. What happens now? Like, what are you working on next? Is it another movie? You gonna get back to something musical?
Yeah, man. There's a few projects out in development. I want to get back out there. I want to direct the next one. I already have it. Not much I can say about it at this moment, but what I can say is that this next project, and pretty much any project I'll ever do, will use music as in some unique way, whether it's a character or a device. Music will be at the forefront of all these ideas, and particularly the synesthetic version of music. There's so much more to explore there. And Musica, I barely scratched the surface of what's possible with bending the conventions of how music and sound are treated in film.
Well, it is. It's you did something masterful. I really do mean that. I had so much fun
Oh, that's
watching
very
it.
nice. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Congratulations on it, Rudy. Seriously, I mean that, and thank you so much for taking the time to talk about it.
Of course, thank you. Thanks for the interesting and smart questions.
My thanks to Rudy. Musica out now on Prime Video. Thanks to you, of course, for checking out the episode. Again, hit that subscribe button before you scoot out of here. That way you get three new interviews sent to you every single week. A new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith with, and don't forget to give the series a rating, leave a review if you feel so inspired as well. After that, head over to WFPK.org. It's where I do a show Monday through Friday, starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. You get 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s. You get the best in new music. There's bonus interviews, lots of music news as well. One of my recent episodes featured classics and favorites from the Beatles and Bob Dylan, Joni Mitchell, Stephen Sanchez, The Dears, Pete Townshend, The Kinks, The White Stripes, Green Day, Kim Gordon, Primus, Lena Lovitch, Joe Strummer, Modern English, Iron and Wine, Harry Nilsson, The Pretenders, Lake Street Dive, Rage Against the Machine, Health, Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, Prince, The Black Keys, and my interview with MGMT just an example of what you can hear every weeknight, starting at 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can, of course, also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always the same. It's at Kyle Meredith. So I do hope you like and follow along. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith, and I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Going out with a bang. I may well see you on the next movie.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.